You don't have to know a lot of things in order to make a huge difference for the Lord in the world. But you do need to know a few things that are great and be willing to live for them and die for them.
Will I let Jesus prove to me that He's truly my strength? To let Him prove inside of me that through Him I can do all things.
The True Strength Life Podcast with Aaron Simpkins.
Check out TrueStrengthApparel.com for clothing you'll love with a message you can trust. That's TrueStrengthApparel.com.
What's up, guys? We're going to keep this podcast moving and going. So I'm just going to go right into it. This is going to be a podcast about my finished books and top books and some not top books of 2022. I happened to finish 60 books this year. I really wanted to hit an even number, like 60, so I basically pushed through four books in the past week so that I could hit that number, but I definitely was by far the most I've ever finished, ever. Last year was my record before, and I believe I hit 22 last year, so 60 is my top. Now, that being said, before we go any further, I'll make it very clear to anybody listening that I do 98% of my books on audiobook. So, no, I'm not reading the books most of the time. I don't like reading on Kindles. I don't like reading on my iPhone, reading off the screen. If I'm going to read, I would much prefer reading a paper physical book. But that just doesn't happen a lot. And to be honest, if audiobooks for me was not an option, well, for one, I would listen to a million podcasts, but besides the point, if audiobooks was not an option, I probably would finish two books a year because I just am way slower finishing a physical book. Because with the audiobook, with my job and with what I do and different points of a day and stuff like that, I have so much opportunity to listen to something, which is why I can get so much done. I can listen to so many different things. And when it comes to reading a book, those time opportunities are just not there. That's the biggest thing. And then second, quite honestly, when I'm reading a book physically, I have a tendency to just fall asleep. Doesn't matter how good it is. Doesn't matter how much I love it. It doesn't matter how much it's holding my attention, because I've been through this with a number of great books. I just tend to fall asleep after only a couple minutes. So that doesn't lend itself to finishing books in a timely manner. So, but anyway, audiobooks, that's what I do. I don't, you know, it doesn't bother me that people don't think that counts as finishing a book, you know, because the way I think about it and what I say is, if I got 1% of a book through listening to it, you know, an audiobook, and I got 1% of new information or just learned and grew 1% from that book, that 1% is most likely more than what you got, because you probably never read that book. And you know, so to me, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if there was one quote that I memorized or that I just remember from a book and nothing else, because I still know that quote. Like, that's still, for some reason, that stuck out and that still means something to me. That still had an impact for some reason. I may not know why, but it probably will come out in some future conversation at some point. So there is, when you put yourself in front of this much information, there is no option but to grow. And that's what I like. That's why I just have this hunger to keep listening. You know, because I don't even know, because I didn't even look up these numbers, but these stats, but you know, yeah, sure, 60 books sounds like a lot, I guess, but I mean, if we were to also include the podcasts that I've listened to, you know, hundreds of podcasts this year. I wish I did have that number, because that would help too to see what I'm listening to. But, you know, so it having this, I think is I love it. I'm blessed by having this. I hope that, you know, if you're listening, that you're challenged by it too. You know, maybe audiobooks are something that you want to jump into. Maybe podcasts is something you want to jump into listening. We live in a day and age, and this is only like the last 10, 15 years, more like 5-10 years, where this is basically new in human history, where we have this access, where we can this easily access the amount of information that we can, the amount of data, the amount of things that we can learn, the amount of stories we can listen to, the amount of testimonies, and just all of this stuff that's available to us. This is a relatively new thing. So if you are totally unfamiliar with audiobooks, or you know, when I say audiobook, you're thinking of like cassette tapes or CDs, you know, from a library. You can do that too, but it's way easier to just have it all on your phone. And so, you know, I use Audible. I love Audible. If you want to learn more about that or whatever, you know, reach out to me, message me, or comment on any of these posts, and I can kind of run you through how that works. I like Audible, but there are other ones. There are free ones too. They definitely don't have the selection that Audible has. Audible, from what I've found, is by far the best selection of books. So just a few pointers there. So I'm going to just jump right into my list. I'm going to go down some lists. I did great sleeper books. So these didn't make my top list, but they're still books that I think are really good. Basically just an extension of my top list. a couple stinkers, a couple books that were just, for whatever reason, I found them not good, not appealing. Still kind of glad that I finished them, but just didn't do anything for me. And then I have my top five. So let's just jump into, well, first I want to mention, I had a first this year where I actually finished a fiction novel series, where I always have done nonfiction, basically have done nonfiction, you know, 99% of the time. And because that's just what I like. That's just what I'm into. If I'm going to spend my time, you know, looking into things, I'd rather do nonfiction than fiction. But there's that creative kind of artsy side that I have a little bit of, that I wanted to see what somebody could come up with. Just because that's what, you know, that's what fiction is. That's what a novel is. That's what a story is that somebody's writing. A fictional story. It's something they completely just came up with that they thought through and finished, and that by itself I think is really cool that we do that, and that, you know, a lot of people have the capability to do that and put a story together like that. I think that's cool. So I just picked one that I heard of from an interview. I was listening to a podcast called the Undaunted Podcast. Undaunted, a man's something podcast. And they were, the guy was interviewing, yeah, now I'm forgetting the host name, but Kyle something, but, he was interviewing, Jack Carr, and that name might be familiar to you guys, some people at this point, cause he's gotten a lot more popular and famous, you know, in the last few months, for a good reason. But he is a former Navy SEAL, and when he left the SEALs, he started writing, basically, and he created the Terminal List. And the Terminalist, why he's more famous now as of recently, is because the Terminalist actually became a series on Prime with Chris Pratt as the lead. And it's an action thriller. It's not Christian at all, but it's an action thriller, heavy, you know, military involvement and just, and you're following this guy's story as, you know, they put him in a trap to blame him for something. And then, his family ends up getting killed. And so he's basically, the Terminalist is basically a list of people that he makes to, kind of in his mind, avenge his family's killing and all of his men getting killed. So he's trying to figure out how to kill these people on his list. And I know, sounds kind of dark, but it's very entertaining. And but I mean, if that stuff's not for you, then don't even try it. You know, don't even attempt to go into it if thriller, action, you know, that kind of stuff's not your thing. But Terminalist, and at this point, that's the first book in the series, but at this point he has 5 out. So this year I actually finished all 5. He has a new one coming out early 2023. I forget exactly when, but that'll be the 6th book. And I finished all 5. Every one of them, when I started it, held my attention right away. And I will say, these were the books I do a fast speed when I listen. So I think I have it at like a 1 is normal speed. Like, that's normal talking. I think I listened to it at 1.7. So not quite double speed, but almost. And which is part of the reason how I'm able to finish things so quickly. But for these books, for this series, I actually purposely slowed it down almost to 1. So that as I was listening to the story, because there's a, you know, it's a story, so there's a lot of different parts to it, a lot of different, you know, sub stories you're trying to follow with from other people because they're involved in the main plot and like all these different things, and so I actually slowed it down and listened to them, but I still finished each one of those books, I think, in less than a week, because that's how much they grabbed my attention, and I just was, you know, into them. So I suggest them, first time, you know, fiction novels. I like the Jack Carr series. It's not called the Terminalist series, but if you just look up Jack Carr, you'll find them. And they're popular enough that you can get them anywhere. So that I thought was, you know, interesting that I did that this year. But let's get into great sleeper books. Sounds kind of funny saying great sleeper books, because if they're so great, why are they sleeper books? I don't know, just because that's what I decided. Called to Create, A Biblical Invitation to Create, Innovate, and Risk by Jordan Raynor. Raynor. That book, I kind of just grabbed that one just because I was like, you know what? Again, not typically the type of book I go after, but I'll just try it. What the heck? And again, going back to the 1% thing, I don't remember a whole lot of specifics from this book, but it was one of those things where I remember as I was going through it and just afterwards, I remember that it was very encouraging. Because a lot of times I don't get much into the books that are like trying to motivate you to do stuff from a Christian perspective. I don't necessarily like those too much usually, because they come off as not super biblical, if that makes sense. Like, they're trying to force their idea of going out and, you know, have like being very pep talky and motivational and instead of biblical in their approach. Well, this one seemed to be very biblical, but still was encouraging in the sense of like, yeah, create things, like try to create things, you know. God created us and we're created in his image. So we have this ingrained, I think everybody has this some level of an ingrained desire and ability to create somehow, or create something somehow. We all have that. It looks different for every individual, but it's there. And I just remember it being very encouraging about all that. So that's Called to Create by Jordan Raynor. Another one. This is gonna be a little different, but this one had my attention. It was I love this book, The Search for God and Guinness, a biography of the beer that changed the world by Stephen Mansfield. Yes, a biography about the Guinness brand beer, the Guinness beer brand. It was the thing with reading. When you read enough, you definitely, your mind gets opened up to a lot of different things, and you can gain a different perspective on some things. And that kind of happened with this book for me, because it's very easy to get caught up in everything is super black and white. And what I've been learning, I think, biblically, is that the things that are obviously black and white biblically, we have to hold to those, you know, that's it. 10 toes down, like, they're black and white. But there are some things that are not necessarily black and white that we make black and white. So anyway, I'm saying all that to say, when you think of, you know, so the Guinness brand actually was started by a strong Christian man who started a, and this is going to sound weird, but started a beer company, started a beer brand to actually help the health of his community. So he actually was starting a beer brand for what he believed was his Christian duty to help his community. And I know in our current modern culture of and how we are, and especially most of the people listening to this are, you know, probably from America and you know, first world countries and stuff like that. Like, that is going to sound weird. Like, that's not possible. That's not how things work. Especially if you're, you know, trying to, you know, be godly about these things. You know, how can you be godly and make a beer brand? I think that's a strong point, and you have a much greater debate for that now. But in his context and in what he was dealing with, and this is why, you know, the book is good, because it explains all this. In his context and what he was dealing with in his community and the conditions, the health conditions that they were dealing with in their environment, it actually was one of the best ways for him to do the best thing for his community, by creating this beer. So, and then it goes on to tell you more about the Guinness company and how they've always just, they kind of have fallen off a lot from what I'm about to say. They've fallen off from this in the past couple decades, but they've always been very much about helping their community and doing the best by their employees. And again, not nearly as much in the past couple decades, but definitely from their beginning in the 1700s for the next, you know, 200 years or so. And just fascinating. That's, I guess that's a good word for this book. It's fascinating. Another sleeper book, Fool's Talk. Fool's Talk, Recovering the Art of Christian Persuasion by Oz Guinness. I thought this was kind of funny. I didn't even realize I did this until after I wrote this list. Oz Guinness is a Christian, well-known Christian author. He's an older guy. He's written a ton of books. He actually is Oz Guinness of the Guinness beer family, which is hilarious. But I didn't realize that I put them back to back until after I made the list. But anyway, Oz Guinness wrote this book, Fool's Talk, and Christian Persuasion. I know I know some people might feel weird about that because, like, we have this, some people have the tendency of being like, well, we just need people to hear the gospel and, you know, God's going to work in their lives and that's just between them and the Holy Spirit. While I definitely do recognize that and believe that in large part, there also definitely is a part to Christian persuasion. Like we are to persuade and convince people of Christian positions. And that's talked about in Acts. That's talked about in Romans. So in other parts too. And I believe in other epistles by the Apostle Paul. But persuasive talk is definitely a biblical thing. So fool's talk is like a layman's version of just helping you think clearly about some of the basic Christian arguments for basic things that are very major topics, but on the base level, like how to think clearly and simply through them, but also how to cut through the nonsense. And that's what this book does very well. So I love that book for that. And it was just the way that he has a style of writing where it's I'll use that word again. It's fascinating. So Fool's Talk by Oz Guinness. Last sleeper book, Kingdom Politics by Tony Evans. Now, obviously this is a political book. And in our climate, you know, bringing it back to America, our cultural climate, obviously politics is a very divisive topic that either many people only ever talk about or many other people completely want to stay away from. And what he does in this book is he basically shows why, as Christians, we should be involved in politics on some level. Obviously, some people are going to be called to be involved in it, you know, hands-on, like frontline, heavy. And then other people are going to be, you know, called to be involved where, like, literally all they just do with their involvement is they vote. But he has a great way of explaining how whatever one you are, even if you're just the person that's called to, you know, just vote, you at least need to be aware of who you're voting for, who the candidates are, and what they stand for. And then know the Bible. So vote for... he had a great line. I forget what he said that he calls himself. Because he doesn't call himself conservative. He doesn't call himself liberal. He doesn't call himself Democrat. Doesn't call himself Republican. I don't remember what the line is. Because I don't think it's just he calls himself a kingdom voter. But the way that he basically, you know, approaches it and says, like, as Christians, this is what we need to always keep in mind is we need to vote for each level. So, you know, local and, you know, state and presidential, like all the way through, we need to vote for who says they're pushing and going for the most biblical positions on things. And he'll even break some of those down. He breaks down like what an actual biblical position is on some of the most, you know, hot button issues. And obviously part of knowing what a biblical position is, you need to know the Bible. So he has a lot of encouragement for that. It's a very good book for if you struggle with as a Christian, like how do I approach politics? This is a book you need to read. And so I highly suggest that. Kingdom Politics by Tony Evans. So before I get into my top five, and I'm trying to keep this episode brief because I know I'm just the one talking and I know you guys don't want to just hear me talk over and over by myself. So what I'm calling the stinkers, or the ones that I, and again, I wouldn't say these are bad books or bad things to check out, but I have particular reasons for why these are what I'm calling the stinkers, the duds, if you want to say. One, Teachings of Buddha by Jack Kornfield. Obviously not a Christian book, but I wanted to hear about some of the main doctrines and teachings of Buddhism from somebody who is a Buddhist teacher. And so that's what this is. Now, why it falls on this list, you very easily could say, and I understand, but you very easily could say, well, you of course, you as a Christian, you put this on the you know, the dud list because, you know, it's a Buddhist book. Just no. I mean, kind of, but no, that's not why it's on this list. The reason why I put this on this list is because, obviously, as a Christian, I definitely believe Buddhism's not true. But as I was listening to this book that is Buddhist teachings from Buddhist, you know, priests and all teachers themselves, and from, you know, I forget what they're called, but whatever the holy scripts are in Buddhism, the more and more and more I was confronted with how foolish Buddhism is, and how they're this huge mansion built on the sand. It's this huge, you know, whole bunch of stuff that sounds so great and so amazing and so peaceful, and we're all about peace, and we're all about, you know, doing good and treating everybody right and things like this. But they have no foundation for any of it. They have no foundation for why. Why is that good? Why should peace in a Buddhist type way of thinking about peace? Why should I think of peace as why should I believe that your version of peace is the best version of peace, is the one that should be promoted to everybody? Now I'm saying that realizing that in general, widespread, Buddhists are very peaceful, and the version of peace that they seek is generally a very good version of peace. But I'm just using that as an example. Like, the point is, they don't have a foundation for it. And that's what I kept grabbing over and over and over as I was going through this book. Like, there's no foundations for anything that they have. And that's one thing that, so if you also keep in mind, because this is kind of a checklist that you can keep in your mind as you're going through learning about other religions and stuff, is how do they answer origins, meaning, morality, and destiny? So how do they answer the beginning of everything? How do they answer what our meaning is as people in this life? What is our ultimate meaning? What is morality? So what is good, bad, evil, all this stuff, and what is the foundation of that, and why, and destiny? What happens when we die? So every worldview answers, if the worldview has an answer for those things, you have to evaluate what those answers are. And and Buddhism just totally falls short. So that's why this book ended up on this list, The Teachings of Buddha by Jack Kornfield. Another one, again, this book was I'll even use the word fascinating. It was a very well done book, The Lost World of Genesis 1 by John H. Walton. And I have this on this list, the dud list, because I just totally disagree with it. And I was very glad that I went through it. I was very happy that I went through this book. I just totally disagree with his stance. I think he makes some decent points that I that I maybe never thought of. But still, ultimately, with how he views Genesis 1, with how he views Genesis as a whole, and how he views origins and things like that, I just think that it's way off biblically. And that's why, you know, this ended up on my list. I probably would suggest that you, if creation, if origins are something that you're interested in, I probably would suggest that you do check this book out. Just to check it out and learn this viewpoint. He's more of a framework hypothesis, framework theory, believing in that's his origin theory that he believes in, or the temple theory. And it's interesting. Like I said, it's very interesting, but I totally disagree. And I totally disagree for biblical reasons. I can't jump into the science and all that kind of stuff, which he doesn't even really bring up science that much. He is coming from a biblical standpoint, but I just totally disagree. And I think that he is, it comes off as one of those theories where you don't want to be that guy that totally disagrees with the mainstream, you know, evolutionary science and billions of years models in the world nowadays and in modern culture that have been here, you know, for the last 15 minutes of human history. You don't want to be the guy that disagrees with that. So I'm gonna read the Bible as much as I possibly can to fit kind of that narrative. Now, in his argument, he will say that that's not at all what I'm doing. What I'm in, again, in his argument, he's saying that I'm trying to read it from the context of what the audience he's writing to, how they would understand it. Which is a decent point on itself, but his conclusions, I just disagree with. But anyway, that's The Lost World of Genesis 1 by John H. Walton. And he has other books too, which I haven't read. But The Lost World of the Flood, I believe, and The Lost World of something else. I don't remember what the other one is, but I think he has three of them. And now this one, the one I couldn't wait to talk about. Will. This was the first book I did this year. Will by Will Smith. You probably have heard of this book because it was pretty popular for a while. And so this was Will Smith's autobiography. What I will say, it was very entertaining. It was, the way it was written, the way it was told, was very interesting. And this was one of the times where listening to the audiobook helped with the experience a lot, because it actually was read by Will Smith. So they even had some background noise and music occasionally to like help with the setting and the story and kind of just the feel you got from what he was talking about. So the experience was pretty cool. But the reason why it's on this list is Will Smith is a very smart guy. He's very smart. Unfortunately, I don't think he's ever been confronted with the super simple questions of like, are you more worried about happiness in life or what's actually true? Because every single thing that he writes about in his experiences in this book, everything is him chasing happiness, him chasing the next thing. And he kind of presents it as, you know, this is what everybody else should be doing because this is what is real and true. But at the end of the day, he's most just worried about his next great experience. And so really what this all came down to, and again, I'll say this, what my thought after I read this book was his worldview is that, And he'll even say, like, he came from a Christian upbringing, especially his grandmom was a strong Christian. So, you know, he claims to have read the Bible a ton and go to church a ton and all this stuff, which I don't doubt. But ultimately, where he's landed as of now is his worldview towards life. He is a new age agnostic mashup of a whole bunch of garbage. And it's so it makes it very interesting, but he's just very wrong. And so it's kind of a shame from that standpoint. I wish somebody in his life would confront him with, like, bro, what are you concerned about? Are you concerned more about your happiness in this life and chasing your next great experience and your next great thrill, your next great, you know, whatever, or are you actually worried about what is true? Because you've tried all of these different things. You say you've tried Christianity. You say you've tried atheism. You say you've tried Buddhism. You say you've tried Hinduism. You say you've tried New Age. You say you've tried, you know, ayahuasca and witches. You say you've tried all this stuff, but you seem to just keep going after the next one, the next one, the next one, and not actually seem to be concerned about looking into which one is actually true. Going back to origins, meaning, morality, and destiny. So, yes, very interesting. But if you at all think like me, you can't help but have those thoughts about that book. I kind of feel bad for him, honestly. I feel bad for him. He did very well. He did very well in explaining his downfalls in life and what he has definitely jacked up as he's gone throughout his career and different relationships. You know, so that was cool and that was appreciated. But, yeah, kind of a dud. Will by Will Smith. Now, we'll get into the top five. This is in no order, but these are just my top five favorite books from this year. For different reasons, but just my favorite ones. So, one that I actually finished this past week, The Fool and the Heretic. The Fool and the Heretic, How Two Scientists Move Beyond Labels to a Christian Dialogue About Creation and Evolution, with Todd Charles Wood and Daryl R. Falk. The book is a setting where there's this group called the Colossian Forum, and from what I gather from the book, they're an organization where they try to bring two sides, they try to bring Christians from two completely different sides of a major topic and get them to have a drawn out, like, create a relationship between the two and have a long drawn out discussion to see if, you know, they can come to an agreement or just to see what happens, basically, but not have it be a, they want it to be peaceful and civil and really just create relationships and realize that there's Christians that just have completely opposite views on some things. And so this was between, Todd Wood, who is a young earth creationist, and Daryl Falk, who is a evolutionary theist, theistic evolution guy, believer. I believe he probably wouldn't necessarily like that title, but that's kind of what he is. He's a Christian that believes in evolution and millions and billions of years. But obviously, because he's a Christian, he believes in God. So, you know, the atheist evolutionary scientists, they kind of shun him, and then his crowd kind of shuns people like Todd Wood, and obviously so the atheists and stuff. But it's fascinating. They're both PhDs. Todd Wood actually has his PhD in evolutionary biology or biochemistry, one of them. But so he has his PhD in studying evolution, and he's a young earth creationist. It just was fascinating. And they go back and forth. They don't end up changing positions at all, either one of them. But they go back and forth, and you get to hear about there's kind of a third party moderator guy who kind of writes like a short chapter, and then you get a chapter from Wood, and then you get a chapter from Falk, and then you get a chapter from the moderator guy, and he brings up a different part of this discussion. So like one of the chapters or articles they have back and forth that they'll talk about, they'll do like, you know, this one is basically about the science, our major scientific disagreements. This one is, and then they'll do another one, you know, this one is about our biblical differences, and this one is about our, you know, what we think of the other in terms of how we think them pushing this view is actually hurting the church. Because, interesting, both of them think that about the other. And so, you know, Todd Wood, the young earth creationist, he believes the other guy pushing for evolution as a Christian is hurting the church and is actively doing harm to the church if we think that way biblically. And then the other guy literally thinks the exact same thing about Wood pushing a young earth creation. And he thinks he's not only hurting the church, but he's also hurting Christians' credibility in the scientific community. So it's very interesting as they go back and forth, and they've actually become friends outside of this. Like they've gotten to really appreciate and have a love for each other. So it was just really cool to hear that and to have an example of guys that are at the highest level possible in their fields and have that type of dialogue and that type of relationship, even though they disagree adamantly like they do. So that was pretty cool. The Fool and the Heretic with Todd Wood and Daryl Falk. Next would be, this is going to be quick, but next would be Terminalist by Jack Carr. I already talked about the Terminalist series, Jack Carr series and his books. Just super entertaining, super just held my attention. And I will say the TV series, in my opinion, was not nearly as good as the book, but I believe that that's probably how it always is. That's what I have always been told by people who read a lot of novels. But yeah, check that out. Terminalist by Jack Carr. Check out, you know, he's got 5 out as of now. So the Terminalist by Jack Carr made my top list. George Whitefield, God's Anointed Servant in the Great Revival of the 18th Century. It's a biography by Arnold A. Dalimore. So this is a biography about George Whitefield. I was just super convicted, challenged, and encouraged throughout this book because we live in a time where we have all of the luxuries and creature comforts that, you know, only the super rich had until 30 years ago, 50 years ago. And yet we typically on average do less than what a lot of people did back then. So I have that running through my head as I'm listening to George Whitefield. He's from the 18th century. He went back and forth from England to America, to the colonies. And it's said of him that his voice, when he preached, had to have been supernatural every time he preached because of how booming it was and how his presentation was just that out of the ordinary. And he was friends with John Wesley. He was friends with Charles Wesley. He actually, just kind of a little side note, he actually was one of the original founders of the Methodist Church, but he pretty much handed the Methodist Church to the Wesleys. Because they had Whitefield and the Wesley and John Wesley, they had a strong theological difference where Whitefield was more reformed and Wesley is not. And Whitefield, they both agreed, but Whitefield said, you know, this following that this, you know, movement as it was a Methodist movement at that point. It wasn't a church, but you know, this following that this movement has had, like, I want to kind of remove myself from the Methodist movement because I don't want our theological differences to hurt the movement, because a lot of people are coming to Christ and a lot of people are being saved through this movement. So I want that to keep going, but it can't be done by both of us at the headship of it because of our differences theologically. So Whitfield actually took a step back from that, which I think is a great example of just, you know, just humility on a leadership level. But so many other things, like he, you know, was stoned. He was beat, you know, he was dragged through streets. It was said that, you know, he was actually being drugged through the street one time, you know, by a rope. And as he was being dragged, as the story goes, he was still actually preaching as he was passing everybody that was, you know, watching him being dragged in the street. He was preaching as he was being dragged. And it's said that, I don't remember who it was, but it was a prominent church leader of the, I believe, the 19th century. He said that George, or actually 18th century, but George Whitefield was probably, in their opinion, George Whitefield was definitely the greatest preacher in modern times, if not the greatest preacher basically since the original apostles. And I mean, just to have that said about somebody is just mind blowing. But I remember another thing, cool story, was Whitfield was friends with Ben Franklin. And so Ben Franklin, being the scientific mind that he was, he had always heard how Whitfield was open air preaching to, you know, thousands upon thousands of people. And he, in his mind, he's thinking, there's no way that all these people can hear this guy's voice out in an open field. And you got 10, 20,000 people listening. There's no way that's possible. Because he's just, you know, this is before microphones and stuff. He's just sitting there talking. Well, really yelling. But so anyway, one of the times Whitfield came to America, he had a huge event, preaching event, and Ben Franklin went to it, and Franklin walked the entire outside perimeter, all the way around where all the people were. And one, he estimated that there was about 15,000 to 20,000 people there. And then he says in his notes about this event, he says, the entire time that I walked the perimeter along the most outer edge of all where the crowd was, there was not one second where I was out of ear range of clearly hearing George Whitefield's presentation, which is just like that's insane. That's mind blowing. And you know, the other stories about how he was basically deathly sick and couldn't move, couldn't stand, but you know, he would have a preaching engagement, and so he just said, like, God will use me if he sees fit, but I need to go there. Like, I'm sick, I might even die soon, but you know, people are expecting me to go preach about our Lord, so I need to go do it. So you guys got to carry me there, and then we'll see what happens. Well, they would carry him there. They would prop him up on the little podium, and then he would change into a whole different being, a whole different person. Like he was totally fine, not sick at all. He was going crazy preaching his normal, you know, like normal. And then as soon as he would be done, he would basically just collapse and go back into his sickness full force. And that, towards the end of his life, that was kind of like a regular thing. But I mean, if that's not like, how else do you explain that? You know, besides being that's a God thing. That's I believe those were probably miracles. And his upbringing is fascinating. His story, the whole thing is just fascinating. And what's one more I remember? He Oh, well, I will say what was pretty cool was my wife and I went to the Bible Museum, or the Museum of the Bible, in Washington, D.C. this past year, and or in this year, and they had a replica there of the traveling little podium that he that Whitfield actually would use, because also to his credit, he was one of the first guys to preach to the workers in the field and even slaves and all, where it was looked down upon for a clergyman at that point to preach to basically people outside of the church or the lowers of society. And Whitfield was like, well, bro, there's thousands of people out in the field and there's thousands of workers that, you know, they can't attend Sunday service. Like, how are those people getting reached? And he was like, nah, I'm not, like, just because you're telling me that this is going to be, you know, frowned upon and you're not going to think that I'm worthy of, you know, the next level of whatever you want to give me as far as the clergy, I don't care, because these people need the gospel. And so he just went, and it's insane. Like, so many stories of how, you know, he riding the boat, you know, to cross the ocean, as he would go back and forth, as he did many times. You know, he'd have the whole boat converted by the time he got back, and it just insane stories like that. George Whitfield, by Arnold A. Dollimore. Definitely check that one out. Next one, my top list: Victory in Spiritual Warfare, by Dr. Tony Evans. Victory in Spiritual Warfare. It's one of those ones where I would put this on a list of books that every Christian, no matter what you're going through, should read. No matter what your interests are, no matter whatever, this is one that you should read because of the topic. The topic is spiritual warfare. Well, if you don't realize by now, basically everything that we go through is spiritual warfare. So how can we have victory, or even go towards victory in spiritual warfare, if we're not even aware of the fact that there's spiritual warfare going on? So it helps with all of that. It helps with the awareness. It helps with again, just being aware that we are in a spiritual battle. We are, and then how to fight that spiritually. And heavily encouraged by this book, heavily challenged. Quite honestly, I probably should go through that one again, because I know there's a lot that I forgot about it. And I even have the physical version of this. And I would like to honestly listen to it as I have the physical one in front of me, so that I can kind of pause it, you know, highlight something, write notes or whatever, and keep going that way, because it's definitely worth doing that with. So Victory in Spiritual Warfare by Tony Evans. My last one. And this was a heavy book. This was a just packed with info, packed with facts, packed with history, and super interesting, also super challenging, I will say. But this last book is How Africa Shaped the Christian Mind, Rediscovering the African Seedbed of Western Christianity, by Thomas C. Oden. Amazing. This book was amazing. One of the major points of this book was that a common misconception, I think we've gotten better with it as in recent times, but a common misconception was that Africa was basically that the Christianity was spread into Africa by Europe, by Europeans, and so that's where you get a lot of the you get a lot of the claims of, you know, colonization, and I'm not going to say that some of the stuff didn't happen, but what they show in this is that it's actually literally the opposite. How the Europeans actually even got Christianity was originally from Africa. So it's going back all the way to the original roots of Christianity, which is in Africa. And so you get to know a lot of the ancient African scholars, which up until only recent times, you know, we weren't really aware of, except for maybe people like Origen. But you get to know more, and just to know, I just think it's so valuable to know this history. And that, I think this will be a book that maybe even this year coming up, I might go through again, just so that I can process and gather more from it that I've already forgotten. So, that is one that I definitely suggest, that as a Christian, you go through this just to know a lot of the history. So again, that's How Africa Shaped the Christian Mind by Thomas C. Oden. So there's all my lists. I'll write out my lists in the show notes. So be sure to check out the show notes of these books that I specifically mentioned. I'll have in the show notes. And then just some quick pointers before I end. I'll try to be done by have this episode be an hour long. So some quick little pointers. I don't think I'll do as many books as next year as I did this year. And I kind of am planning it that way because I have a plan so this year when I went to pick books, I basically picked whatever piqued my interest. And so that's what I did. So it's pretty random as far as all the books that I've done. But what I'm planning on doing this year is to be a lot more specific with and have a planned out approach to the books that I'm going to do. I'm considering of doing it where I do maybe 15 or 20 books basically on one subject, and then do like just two or three subjects throughout the year, so that way I become very well versed on a couple subjects instead of just surface level versed on a whole bunch of stuff. And so I'm still deciding how exactly I want to do that, what those subjects might be. And then obviously once I do all that, I need to kind of plan out what the books are going to be. But that's just one thing of what I'm thinking of, how I'm probably, I'm guessing I'm not going to get near 60 books next year. But cause I kind of have a plan of how I'm going to do that. So again, links will be in the show notes. And if you are friends with me on Facebook or even on Instagram, I might do it on Instagram. I'm not really sure. But I will have posted on my Facebook all of the books I did. So I'll have all 60 of the books on there. Just so if you want, you can look through the list and see if anything, you know, piques your interest and, you know, you want to check it out. So you guys let me know in the message me, comment, text, whatever, however you want to reach me. Let me know, what were your favorite books in 2022? Let's learn more. Let's encourage growth in that way. And just, you know, keep this moving, keep this growing. And, so what were your favorite books in 2022? And what are you, how are you kind of, planning to do books in 2023? What are some ideas that you have? So I hope I maybe gave you something that was worthy of listening, and you didn't get through this hour and realize that you just wasted all your time. but yeah, so this is all my books, my favorite books and some duds from 2022. And like I said, I'm happy with how this went for this year, and I'm looking forward to next year. So you guys let me know what you think. Let me know what your plans are for next year with books, and let me know what your favorites were from this year. So with that, let's keep it moving. you're hearing this right now, that means that you made it through the whole episode, and we greatly appreciate that and thank you guys. There are links in the show notes for you that I believe may be helpful for you in relation to this episode. The best ways to help the show, if you're interested, would be to share it among your circles, check out our merch site, truestrengthapparel.com, and please take 7 seconds to rate, comment, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. The True Strength Life podcast and apparel exist to speak and show truth to the culture, so support us if you believe that's needed. Until next time, be bold and stand strong in truth. Get involved practically in the fight against abortion by supporting and donating preborn.org. So many of us talk about hating abortion, but how many of us actually do something about it, fighting it, even if it's just donating your money? Donating and even getting involved with preborn.org is a very easy, very practical way to get in the fight for the most innocent among us. Not only does your support provide ultrasounds and counseling, it also provides maternity clothes, baby clothes, diapers, and formula. More importantly, your sponsorship gives a young mother an opportunity to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. Help fight for that life in the womb that has no voice, and help fight to give hope to that mom and family on the outside of the womb. $28 pays for one ultrasound, where it is found that 80% of moms will choose life if they have seen an ultrasound of their baby. Support at preborn.org.